Today's program has been brought to you by 360 Cookware. Their stainless steel cookware uses vapor technology to cook better tasting, more nutritional food. To learn more and receive 20% off, click their logo on our website, heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, millions of American listeners. This is Patrick Martins. We're broadcasting live on Sunday, January 13th. Is that right? Is it the 13th, Joe?
It's the 13th. Nice. You got it.
This is an exciting day. We are sponsored by 360 Cookware. They're really awesome to have supported us, and everyone should go and buy 360 Cookware. I mean, you know, at this point, Joe, you know, it's about minimalism. You know, you don't want a ton of crap in your kitchen. So the few things that do exist should be super, super cool. And you know what I mean? You don't need an overwhelming amount of crap in your kitchen.
No way.
No way. And you just need a few cool things. You know, I think actually one of the things that every American needs is a meat grinder, like in the old days, and 360 cookware, and a mortar and pestle. And, you know, those three basic things are like you're in a sharp knife, of course, and a wooden cutting board. But, you know, 360 cookware, definitely important. We're going to have an exciting show today. We have Bill Page, who is a musician, a heritage breed farmer, and a Hill Country, Texas radio show host on KDRP Community Radio. He does a show called Friday Free for All. So very, very interesting guy that I met at my brother-in-law's wedding. So I am excited. I'm going to the Nets game, Joe. Fifth row. With, you know, we went in on the season tickets with the Roberta's guys, and I am so excited. I feel like a little boy walking down to the fifth row, like a total celebrity, like child in an amusement park / candy shop. It is just so much fun. So,
who are they playing tonight?
They play the Indiana Pacers, who are hot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, very, very exciting. So, I'll start off the show. You know, now I'm writing a book. I got a book deal, which I am really excited about. It's not just a stupid book deal. Thank you. Thanks, Joe. That's amazing that you know how to do that with your hands. I got a book deal, so it's like really, really cool. And it's going to be, you know, 53-page essays. And so I'm now all of a sudden having to do things like research and put my ideas on paper. So it is a new chapter for me. You know, kind of coordinates with Heritage Foods, me taking on more responsibilities and taking the reins back of that organization. So I hope that a side effect is that my radio show gets better. But here is an interesting press release from, I think, what is it? It's some, you know, one of these farm blogs. But Purdue Farms and the company's contract grower, Hudson Farm in Berlin, Maryland, did not, they say, pollute the nearby Chesapeake Bay or Pocomoke River or violate the Clean Water Act, according to a federal judge. The decision closes a three-year lawsuit filed on March 1st, 2010 by the Waterkeeper Alliance and Robert Kennedy Jr., who is, you know, a friend to the sustainable food movement. He's the head of the Waterkeepers Alliance, the founder. The civil suit was filed against Hudson Farm based on a pile of material on the property that was assumed to be chicken manure, but was instead municipal sewage sludge from Ocean City, Maryland, that was used to fertilize crops. The Maryland Department of the Environment inspected the farm, confirmed the pile was biosolids, asked the Hudsons to move the pile, and the Hudsons complied. Lawyers for the Waterkeeper Alliance then argued manure leaving the poultry houses from ventilation fans and foot traffic polluted a ditch along the farm, which leads to the Pocomoke River. They lost that too, and some president of the National Chicken Council, Mike Brown, says, "We feel this lawsuit We feel like this was a lawsuit against all of us, and we were pleased that Judge Nickerson ruled that the Waterkeeper Alliance had not met the standard preponderance of evidence in its argument. So this is a game, Joe. Who do you guess is right? Who do you guess? Do you guess that it is Purdue and the Hudson Farm, you know, in Berlin, Maryland? Or do you believe that the Waterkeeper Alliance, a small nonprofit, is wrong?
I'm going to go with the Waterkeeper Alliance on this one.
Yes, I think the Waterkeeper Alliance was right and that they would not have brought a lawsuit against a major chicken farm like Purdue unless there was some degree of truth in it. And then, by the way, the other thing is, what's up with the chicken farm next to a mountain of municipal sewage?
That's disgusting.
That is disgusting. So, you know, that's an interesting thing, who's right. And, you know, of course, Sunday is always the morning show. Sometimes I wish I didn't do show on Sunday because I always watch these morning shows. Like, here's another, who is right? What about some, just some type of gun law? By the way, Mario Cuomo is passing a very aggressive, you know, anti-assault weapon gun law here. Just, you know, that thing happens in Connecticut. It's happened in other places. You know, you would think people would come together like they would in Europe and just be like, good Lord, we got to do something. There's got to be a shot back against the bow of guns. Just some type of gun law, not going in and taking people's guns. I mean, that fear is just an insane one. You know, who's right there? I would argue that it is right to, you know, entertain the idea of enacting some type of law. But, you know, of course, the gun lobby, no way, can't touch it. So hopefully Biden has some balls. I always like that guy, Joe Biden. He will come up with some type of recommendation to Obama on Tuesday to, you know, come up with some meaningful, symbolic act also to honor all those kids that, you know, something comes from it. You know, when Brady got hit, you know, Ronald Reagan's right-hand man, you know, they passed an assault rifle ban. So let's see what happens with this. I mean, if all those kids dying doesn't lead to anything, something's wrong. So, you know, let's see. Guess who's right on that one? Also, I was watching CBS, you know, it's not called Meet the Press. It's the other one. And he was like, you know, in all my years, I'm 70 years old or 80 years old. In all my years, I have never seen every single cabinet post nomination, you know, people who President Obama or, you know, who gets to choose who's in his government and on his cabinet, everyone he's putting in, the Treasury guy, the defense guy, every single person he's nominated is being fought against. And he's like, it's unprecedented. In 50, 60 years, I have never seen every single nominee get fought, you know, in Congress. Who's right there? You know, and plus John McCain, I used to kind of want to like that guy. That guy's a loser. I mean, if anyone deserved ever, you know, a cock punch, I think it would be him. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, at first seemed kind of okay, but he just seems like a pain in the butt. Pain in the butt. So anyway, that's my political talk. Did you hear about Bonnie, the longest tenured Roberta's waiter, did her final shift in the nude? Did you hear that,
Joe? Oh, yes. That was big news around here.
That was big news everywhere.
It was crazy. I had friends that I hadn't talked to in months call me and say, hey, is that, you know, did that actually happen? I was like, apparently it did. I wasn't here that day, but
oh, you missed it. Well, I've seen her naked when she was at the beer beer competition. She was also naked for that, but she did her final shift. It was an early shift, like around 9:30 p.m. because they had their staff party, their annual staff party, and she did it in the nude. So yeah, her butt was everywhere. She was wearing an apron. But, you know, I thought that was pretty cool and, you know, wouldn't happen at a lot of restaurants. But we got to have Bonnie come in and talk about that historic final shift. So anything else going on? How was the week at the station, Joe? Any major guests or super awesome stories that you heard?
A really good show that happened this week that I thought was just pretty interesting was Helen Holliman had on this woman named Alana McGee from Seattle, who trains different breeds of dogs to find North American truffles, like up in Oregon and stuff like that. So that was pretty interesting. It's a side of the food world that I feel like we don't get to see that much.
Well, yeah, because if you go around people's property with the pig, just walking a pig, people know.
Yeah,
that what you're looking for. But if you go with the dog, it's not so. Not so telling.
Exactly.
I didn't know they had. So they do have real truffles here in the States, huh?
They do. They do. And apparently they are, just as good as some of the European varieties.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. But what Alana had to say was that it was mostly in the harvesting techniques where you lose a lot of the quality in the North American truffles. So they're still not quite as pricey or recognized as the European varieties, but she said she believes in them, so it was a pretty cool interview.
That is cool. Well, I love dogs. I'm just running one of my chapters. Pigs are actually equal to intelligence and trainability as dogs. So pigs and dogs, both compatriots in the search for the ever-valuable truffle in Europe and in the North Pacific Northwest. So, well, I'm excited about today's show. This guy is a he does a bunch of stuff. Like I say, he's a musician. He knows all about hill country. He's a farmer. He's involved with Farm Aid. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we are sponsored by 360 Cookware.
You're listening to Quitting Time by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by AmeriCraft. AmeriCraft and 360 Cookware are proud sponsors of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. AmeriCraft is an American company, and like Heritage Radio Network, they provide the best. Their 360 Cookware is made of the highest quality ingredients, like United States steel. It is made in the greenest cookware manufacturing plant in the world. AmeriCraft makes great cookware and is focused on improvement. 360 Cookware is their exclusive line. It's a contemporary line of cookware and bakeware intended to let you, the Heritage Radio Network listeners, have a unique cooking experience. Its vapor seal allows food to be cooked in its natural juices, preserving all of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients without added water, oils, or fats. 360 Cookware invites you to learn more about how this process works on their website, www.360cookware.com. Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Francis Malman.
Cooking with fire, it's very feminine, it's very fragile.
And Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Jack said bakeware. Hey, Bill Page, are you on the line with us?
I'm right here, Patrick. How you doing?
Oh, good. Thanks so much for being on, waking up early on a Sunday.
No problem. Are you kidding? Waking up early on a Sunday? I've been up for about 4 hours, at least four or five hours.
That's the farmer in you, not the musician. Well, tell us about...
You got that right.
Tell us about, I mean, you have a very interesting life, and I so enjoyed meeting you, and I was really, the reason I wanted to have you on, besides enjoying our short time together at the wedding, was I am so fascinated by hill country. So let's start off, before we get to your farm, farm and your music life. Tell us about KDRP Community Radio and Friday Free for All, your radio show.
Well, you know, to backtrack a little bit, my wife and I lived in Chicago for 30 years, basically all through from 1980 till 2010. And a little bit before that, we decided to change our lifestyle and get out to the country a little bit, maybe do a little bit of a bigger scale gardening that we were able to do in our little house in Chicago, and maybe even raise some animals. And over time, that developed into buying this property here in the Texas Hill Country, just about 25 miles from downtown Austin, straight west. And if you just keep west out of Austin, you hit the Hill Country pretty quickly. Dripping Springs is considered the gateway to the Hill Country, and then you get out into real hilly land. But we fell in love with this stretch of property here, about 3.5 acres, about an acre of which is good pasture, and we just fell in love with the property and the Hill Country. The Hill Country vibe is very mellow, and it's beautiful out here, and the weather is great most of the time. So those are some of the high points.
For sure, for sure. And then had you been involved in radio? I mean, as a kind of a sister community spirit, you know, I wanted just to, you know, find out what is the theme of your show.
Well, as we were preparing to move down here, KDRP went on the air just a little over 3 years ago, I think. And so I started listening from Chicago to kind of get a sense of what I was going to be moving down to and making my new home. And I had been involved with radio since college. I went to Loyola University in Chicago, was involved with the Loyola Radio Conference, which is a pretty famous college radio conference. And even as an adult, with my journalism training, I would help out the local community stations with news writing seminars, and I would guest on various shows for different reasons over time. But I never really had a weekly show or a monthly show or a regular show on any kind of a station. But when I came down here, the radio station was the first place I went to volunteer my services, and they offered me what evolved into the Friday Free For All, and that was just basically a Friday morning live show from 7 a.m. till 10 a.m. where I could do whatever came across the transom. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Our issues were wide and varied. I would talk about space exploration, or I would talk about sustainability, or I would interview conservationists or people involved with family farming. But I didn't limit it to that. I had a lot of musicians on the show, a lot of authors. Well, most famously, we might have talked about it, I had Gene Logsdon on the mm-hmm. show, and that was one of the most popular shows that I did, because people know who he is and respect his work, and got a kick out of hearing him talk, because he doesn't really do a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So contextualize a little bit this Hill Country where you have this radio show. I mean, I read on your website it's the kind of station and maybe the region that you're talking about is runs along Highway 290 from Bastrop and Austin to Luckenbach, which I believe was like in a Merle Haggard song or something like that. So can you explain that part of the world to us? You know, the food, the culture, the climate, the people?
No, I can't. I'm completely ill-equipped to explain that the Hill Country culture to you, having only been here for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Except to say that it's very different from what you might imagine. I mean, the pace is slower. What we miss about a big city like Chicago is the food diversity. They're in Austin, of course, which is a very food-oriented town. Food trailers are everywhere, and every imaginable kind of cuisine that you want is available. But it's in general not made in the vast quantities it is by the native culture people, and so you get a different kind of experience. So we do miss the Asian cuisines and the Indian and the Thai and Korean and Italian even food that we could access at restaurants in Chicago. But beyond that, I mean, they do a great job with barbecue and brisket. I mean, you wouldn't want to come anywhere else and have better meat. We're trying, you know, we're raising our own some of our own animals, mm-hmm. but we obviously can't, you know, even with two people, we can't fully sustain ourselves. So it's been interesting exploring other sources for small farmer produced meat that we can support here in our local area.
And I imagine there's a rich German culture there, right? I mean, we recently had on the owner of, God, what is the name of the barbecue now? It's escaping my name. The famous barbecue, Joe, do you remember? It was called...
I think it was the Salt Lick.
Yeah, Salt Lick.
Salt Lick, right?
Yeah,
well,
Salt Lick.
There is a large German population out here, and as you move further west, toward Fredericksburg, it gets a little bit more, Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and KDRP, you know, is it's a 3-year-old radio station, so it's really growing and it's really changing. I started with a 1-day-a-week show, and now I'm on Monday through Friday from 3 to 7 in the afternoons, and I'm sandwiched in between some really fantastic veteran radio personalities from Austin and around the rest of the country. Hmm. I come right after Jessie Scott, who was the first female country DJ in the United States.
Okay.
And she created the outlaw country format for XM Sirius Radio 10 or 12 years ago. In the mornings is Bo Chase, who is a veteran Austin DJ who was most recently on a very popular oldie station. And then after me most nights is Larry Monroe, who was on a big public radio station here in Austin for 30 years and is he's called a radio icon. So for me to be doing my what I love, I mean, I've always loved radio. I've been a huge fan. I've got many friends who are DJs and who have done, you know, various jobs in radio over the years. I've worked with in my jobs as a journalist and as PR and marketing over the last 30 years. I've worked with tons of radio producers and TV producers and always found what they did fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm able to do that, you know, for myself and kind of explore different people who, you know, if someone from the sustainable food community or this part of my life comes across that, you know, that's interesting, I can talk to them. Mm-hmm. But if a cool musician I love, like Thomas Dolby, you know, from She Blinded Me with Science, came to Austin last year for South by Southwest.
That was my first tape ever. She Blinded Me with Science. Wow, that's awesome.
There you go. I was able to do a whole hour on my show with Thomas Dolby and play his music. So that was... So it really runs the gamut.
Before we get to your music and the farm, which I want to talk about because of all the cool heritage breeds, I mean, now one last question about Texas. When I went to Bill Saxelby's, who we were at his wedding event. That's where we met, and they lit a 3-story tall wooden Godzilla on fire. And when the fire finally got to the mouth, fireworks shot out of the mouth. That was amazing. But when I went to his graduation, I was amazed at how the president of the university talked so much about Texas. You are a Texas graduate. You're a Texas graduate. You are a proud, college graduate from Texas, Texas, Texas. And, you know, I was thinking about when I went to Vassar and I graduated, and, you know, no one was like, you are a proud citizen of the state of New York. You know, it's a very, particular.
It's
yeah. What is, how do you describe that? I mean, is it an, are they neighborly? Are they, because they're Texans? I mean, do they view themselves different than the rest of the country? I mean, can you touch upon that ethos a little bit? Because it is so different and so particular.
I don't think Texans view themselves as different from, you know, other people per se. I just think that it's more of a communal identity spirit. I think it's about helping. When we moved down here, it wasn't like, oh, you know, why are you Yankees invading our space? I mean, everybody was genuinely very welcoming, interested in what we were doing, helpful to the point that they could be, and more than an antagonistic spirit. I really got from most people a spirit of, hey, what took you so long? And musically, you know, all I have to the thing that puts a big smile on my face is Lyle Lovett's "All Right, So You're Not From Texas. Texas Wants You Anyway," and that's a great Lyle Lovett song, and it tells my story. It's like, you know, you don't wear your boots right, and you don't tuck your shirt in right, and your hat's not curled just right. But you know, that's okay. We'll
love you anyway.
What we got.
So now back to, you know, getting to the farm and music and a little bit more about you, Bill. Is there a connection between your farm and your music? I mean, have you drawn commonalities between the two life thrusts for you?
No, I'm really, well, you know, except for the fact that I'm an extremely amateur person at both endeavors at this moment. So I feel like I'm still an amateur musician, even though I've had professional experiences and I do get to play with a lot of very skilled and professional people. I still feel like I'm learning all the time, and certainly with the farming and ranching, the small operation that we've set up here in the last 2 years, I'm learning all the time and feel like an amateur. So there's not really that much crossover between the two.
What are the main musical venues in Hill Country? I mean, everyone thinks about Austin, but you mentioned a bunch of other towns and famous venues where you play. Can you name some of those places for our listeners?
There's certainly a lot out here. I mean, as the first place you hit leaving Austin is probably the Nutty Brown, and then as you get into Dripping, you go to a couple of different places. There's a new place opening up actually in February, a new dance hall, and then you can go down to Green. There's a very famous dance hall down in Green. If you go down to New Braunfels, you'll find Whitewater, which is a huge outdoor arena. And these kinds of there's concerts and festivals. You can go all the way to Luckenbach, which is basically a very small little town, a post office and a bar, basically with a grandstand, and they'll put 10,000 people in there for a Reckless Kelly show. Mm-hmm. So it's just the music is everywhere all the time, and if you're a music fan, it can be a little bit overwhelming because wherever you are seeing music, there's probably four or five other places you think you should be or you might want to be.
For sure. Well, let's get a little bit into the thing where we, the subject where we most intersect. You have become a kind of a safe haven for some really cool, rare breeds. So let's talk about that. And first, the Gulf Coast sheep. There's only a couple hundred in North America and maybe 2,000 worldwide. So talk to us about how that breed is interacting with your farm. And yeah, it's a rare breed, so I'm interested to hear about it.
Well, all of the animals that we have pretty much on the farm are listed on the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy website. You know, it's the ALBC-USA.org, and that includes the Gulf Coast sheep. They're listed as critical, and they're just my wife selected most of the breeds. I mean, I deal with the animals on the ground, but she picked them out, kind of an overarching statement. All the breeds were selected for their temperament and their sort of in list of importance. Temperament, ability to stand the heat down here, disease resistance, and in the case of the sheep, we haven't had any worming problems, which people say they have with sheep because these sheep are pretty healthy and are pretty good. And the reason they're critical on the critical list or on the watch list or whatever is that they're not factory farmed because they're maybe too small for meat production that's generally the reason. I mean, for the sheep and our Dexter cow, our miniature cow, they're too small for meat production. So the factory farmers don't really want to continue that. So we've selected them to kind of, to help continue their existence.
Yeah, so you have a Dexter cow, a small breed of cow originally from Ireland.
Right.
And then you have this Gulf Coast sheep, which you use for wool and meat. I mean, do you slaughter these animals at the end?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we've had three. You know, we've had three lambs born on the farm in the last 2 years since we started, and those we have, put in the freezer to consume ourselves. Mm-hmm. And on Thursday this week, we just had two more lambs born to one of our ewes, and we'll probably get another one from the other ewe before too long here.
Is there
spring lambs? They're spring lambs, you know.
Yeah.
So yes, when we started, you know, they said, you know, you're not a farmer unless you're using your animals for the four M's, you know, meat, manure, milk, and muscle. Mm-hmm. And we don't really use them for muscle too much, but the other three is working out, you know, pretty well.
Is there a network of small family farms and small slaughterhouses in that part of the country? Has that been a preserved culture, or is it hard to come by?
Well, I don't know. One of the things I wrote in a little essay that I did before I even started this, kind of a before snapshot of what we were planning to do, was that while we had these animals, rather than do the slaughter and ourselves, we would support a local person or a local abattoir that would also do other small family farms. I don't think we're quite there yet in our United States culture, or even in the Texas rural culture, where there's that much small farming and ranching going on in a certain area to support an individual that's just doing that. So the short answer is that we found a good butcher that was willing to process our meat for us at a very reasonable price. And that's who we use.
Oh, very good, very good. Yes, they are hard to come by. It's amazing. So then you have chickens, too, that lay your eggs. The Dorkings, is that an endangered breed as well?
The Dorkings are listed as threatened. Mm-hmm. And they're the chicken in civilization. They're 5,000-year-plus old chicken. The Egyptians used to... And they're the only five-toed chicken breed, the main known five-toed chicken breed. I used to say that, and you have to be careful when you use superlatives like all and only, because I used to say that it was the only five-toed chicken. But I've come across a couple of other chicken breed names that escape me at the moment who are listed as having five toes. So we'll leave that for now. They're a five-toed chicken, which you don't see very often. Mm. And the Egyptians used to draw them in hieroglyphics on their homes. So the Dorkings are, but they're not. Again, they're not huge layers. They're not super productive, but they are beautiful, and they are nice and have good temperament, and that allows us when there are. Now, with the baby lambs, our city dog is a little bit too interested in them as he was in the calf when our Dexter cow gave birth to the calf. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to keep him segregated. Other than that, we can have an open campus most of the time where all the animals can kind of mingle around together.
Well, that's partly because of your guard dog, and I'm always touched by these awesome guard dogs. There's a whole category of farm dogs, but you have a particularly rare one, the Karakachan. Is that, am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, Patrick, thank you so much for not letting me forget our delightful Karakachan guardian dog. They're from Bulgaria, mm-hmm. and in World War II, Hitler, tried to have them exterminated because they were message dogs for the Allied troops, mm-hmm. especially the Bulgarian troops, so now they're coming back. I think the last thing I read that there was between 700 and 1,000 Karakachans bred right now in the world. So he's a big dog, like a kind of like a Saint Bernard, but just super gentle with anything or anybody that's not threatening his stock. I mean, he really doesn't get protective except in the case of the stock and in case of something that's threatening them. So
has that happened before, where he's had to fight off a coyote or something?
He hasn't had to fight off anything, you know, but the downside is he won't chase off a deer either because he doesn't see them as a threat. So I have to rely on my city dog to chase off the deer because he hates that.
Yeah. Well, very, very interesting. It was great to meet you. And, you know, this is cottonwoodcreekfarm.net, which has links to the radio, history of these breeds. So very, very interesting. You've lived both sides of the life. You lived the rat race in Chicago, and then you moved and you started to protect all these endangered breeds. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, one day we'll email you. We'd love to use one of your songs maybe on the station here every now and then. So great, great, very interesting. And I really recommend people going down to Hill Country. You know, people always look into Europe and, oh, where could we travel in Central America? But really right here in our own country, Hill Country especially, you know, lies unbelievable culture and history and people and music and culture. So
there's a great wine trail. If people are fans of wine, there's a wine trail that you can pick from 15 to 20 different Texas wineries to visit while you're out here.
Yeah, Texas has got good wines. That's true. Well, Mr. Page, thanks so much for being on. We hope to have you on again. And thanks. Yeah, thanks for letting us call in today.
Patrick, I appreciate it. And good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much. And we'll take a break and come back and conclude the show. Interesting, a little bit of Hill Country culture. So Joe, tell me about Wild Game Domain, the newest show on the Heritage Radio Network.
Well, Wild Game Domain is hosted by Chad Pagano of ICE Culinary School. It's been really interesting so far. We've aired one episode, but it's just another way to shed some light on hunting, which kind of gets a bad rep a lot because of a lot of the gun control things that we were talking about earlier in the show.
I don't know if that's true. I think hunting should be preserved. But by the way, you shouldn't have a machine gun while you're trying to hunt a duck.
Exactly.
Know? Anyway, so they are separate. But so what is he talking about? Like deer and moose and birds, things like that?
Exactly. He's going to focus on deer in the beginning, and then talk about other kinds of game. We have this nice wild boar head in the studio. It'd be cool to hear him talk about going down to Texas maybe even and shooting some wild boar. That'd be pretty cool.
But boars are pretty aggressive. And then the meatball shop, the famous meatball shop in New York, there's three of them existing and then two more opening. They did a pilot. How did that go?
It was hysterical.
What did they talk about?
Well, they talked a lot about I guess it was cuisine that involves a lot of pickled vegetables, like Vietnamese sandwiches, but not from Vietnam, sort of. They had some guests, and then, they just went off. They're really funny guys, Mike and Dee, so they were having a blast in the studio. And they've only recorded one episode, so hopefully we can hear more from them soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, great show. Thanks so much, Joe, for producing and engineering. That's impressive that you did both.
Oh, no problem.
And we'll be back next week. We got Steve Jenkins. We're going to talk all about olive oil, and we're going to taste like 100 olive oils and talk about the 2012 press, which supposedly was one of the most legendary of all time. So have a great week, and stay tuned for Straight No Chaser with Katie Kiefer.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.